Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Barling and Barrett. My name is Simon Barrett, and I'm joined by my very good friend, veteran travel lawyer, Manny Barling. Manny, hello.
Hey, Simon, how are you this afternoon? Is it a beautiful day in Mississippi?
Yeah, but what a strange weekend. And yesterday I watched the space shuttle doing something it was never ever designed to do, navigating LA traffic. And today I watched the truly bizarre parachute jump by some nutcase from 127,000 feet. I mean, these events make the elections look positively sensible.
Oh, actually, I envied him. I bet that was one hell of a ride. I mean, you know, if you're a thrill seeker like roller coasters and stuff, that's the penultimate, isn't it?
Well, I can't imagine anything that would be more. And how did that parachute ride turn out, Simon? I was interested in that. Did he make it?
Oh, he made it. And unofficially, he clocked in at 729 miles an hour.
Well, he was trying to make a sound barrier.
Exactly.
Did someone have a radar gun? I mean, right next to town with them?
Well, yeah, they were. Well, of course, they were. You know, they were showing a live feed for Red Bull, who sponsored it. It was a great PR stunt for Red Bull.
That's a good sponsor for it. So he's sitting home. So that guy's sitting down, having a Red Bull, eating some wings right now.
What a great idea. I'm up for that. So before we go any farther, I should introduce those strange voices in the background for those who have not been initiated into our chaos. That was Sam Moffey, our distinguished member of the Cleveland mob, and that's actually the restaurant mob. I don't want to cast any aspersions. And, of course, Peter Haven, who's basking in the beach in Southern California while the rest of us are suffering. Peter, welcome. Sam, welcome. And before we start the show, I have an important news release. Friday night, Notre Dame High School beat Crespi High School 40-34 in a 4-overtime high school football game in the San Fernando Valley. On behalf of all my fellow Notre Dame grads, hi, John, how are you? You're the other member of the group here. John Perry, a graduate of Crespi High, one of our rivals high school-wise. So how are you doing, John?
We was robbed, Manny.
I'm sure you were. See, high school football has just as much place here as it does in Ohio.
That's good to know.
Oh, it's deadly serious here. I mean, you have to remember that John Elway started a few miles from my house, and they showed every game live while he was in high school because there was so much interest in him.
Wow.
Yeah,
well,
really.
We had Bernie Kosar, so of course, yeah. They both met in two great AFC championship games, of which Elway went on to much greater fame than Bernie.
Yeah, I felt very
Bernie,
bad.
Bernie went on to bankruptcy.
Yeah.
Bernie had some really, he was a very generous man. I know him while I went to high school with him. And a lot of people took advantage of him, and he allowed himself to be taken advantage of. But he's coming back nicely, and I wish him nothing but good fortune. He's a nice guy, and he's really beat up. You know, from that offensive line he played for the Browns, and he can barely walk.
That's a shame.
Oddly enough, Sam, I watched a very interesting special on ESPN's 30-30 called Broke the other day. Just happened to turn it on when it was on. And it was this long succession of football players who have essentially now broke, who never saved enough money while they were playing and living these horrendously difficult lives and all the horrible things that happened, the stories of all the women, you know, who basically wanted their money and how some literally were using a marriage as a way and basically sex as a way to trap them as husbands. It was really, I thought, quite disgusting. Have you seen it?
Yes, and there's also a companion piece done on the 95 Browns, which is
right.
It also played in how Art Modell was one of the last owners who literally the team was his income. He wasn't one of the new multi-billionaires with a team as just a toy, and he went into bankruptcy almost, and that's why he had to move the team. But he borrowed 18. $18 million from a bunch of the banks in Northeast Ohio to pay the great Andre Risen to a guaranteed contract, and that kind of set the spiral in place. Risen caught four passes for the Browns in 3 years.
Yeah, when he wasn't busy having his house burned down. Remember, he was living with Lisa Left Eye Lopez, who was a rock star who was a little psychotic and weird, who one day, because he wouldn't marry her, speaking of this whole issue with sports stars and marriage, burned his house down.
Yes, I remember. Yeah, they need to I hope they show that ESPN documentary to all the NFL players right now starting or even in there, because before their career's over before they blink their eyes. And when I see Boney Kozo, who's 2 years younger than I am, I'm 52, shuttling around and doesn't, you know, with screws in his ankles and his elbows, and as someone pointed out, I think it was Peter, you know, bankrupt and all that. Sad.
Yeah, it is.
Same.
Okay, folks. I do. You know,
you
want to
do a show now?
Right.
I mean, what is this about? Our listeners really enjoy our gossip. I didn't know this was, you know. Wow. Next thing you want is for us to be civil to each other.
Oh, Lord, no.
The gossip keeps us civil with one another.
I mean that would spoil the entire event if we all liked each other.
Okay, I get to play Joe Biden.
Okay, that's a good jumping off point.
Funny, that's
what
the Republican said.
I'd love to know what everyone thinks about the deep debate. Particularly style versus substance. Manny, would you care to weigh in?
Well, you know, I think that beauty is in the eye of the party. And it's not surprising that everybody's viewpoint about the debate centers on who they support in the election, which always goes back to my first belief that there are really no people that are, shall we say, uncommitted to a position, only those people who do not admit it. So in this particular case, I found strengths and weaknesses in both of them. I don't care one way or another about his style, which seemed to be the basis of most Republicans complaining. But then again, I heard a lot of Democrats complaining about Romney's style in the other debates. So at some point, losers complain and winners don't. So the more the Republicans have complained, is the more I've sensed that the Democrats and Biden probably won the debate. I personally, my position is whoever you liked, that was the winner. If you don't like them, they're not a winner. Anyone feel differently?
Yeah, I think Ryan won the debate.
We know where your politics are.
Manny and Peter, I have to ask you a question. You guys are lawyers, very successful lawyers. You've tried cases in front of juries. Would you ever make faces like that? Did you ever do anything like Biden did with the theatrics to
righteous indignation? Yeah, it works with some juries, but not with others. You have to be very, very careful of how you use it. And I don't think it's a favored tactic by most people now. But at the same time, looking at where this particular election has gone, or debates have gone, and the style used by Romney, it might have been more appropriate because, to a great extent, Romney's style, people seem to like it. So what can you say?
Yeah, I mean, I was just curious. You know, I've seen Biden, really been on the national stage for 42 years, debate many, many times. I've never seen him be so animated, the term I used, and I think it was a draw, and therefore, because of that, Ryan won, because he shouldn't have been. In my opinion, 42 years of being a United States senator and sitting vice president, he should have mopped the floor with Ryan. I expected him to mop the floor, and he didn't. So therefore, just on that alone, I gave Ryan the because it was a tie, I gave him the victory. It was like kissing your sister.
What does it say the tie goes to the Republican Party?
Only because I thought, I'm just going by, here's a guy, 42 years, he's been a national figure for as long as Paul Ryan's been alive. He shouldn't have even had a prep for a debate. He shouldn't have had to do anything. He should know this stuff left, right, and center. And where he really screwed up is where I think that's really an Achilles heel right now as far as the foreign policy goes, is this whole backpedaling and not really knowing what happened in Libya. In Benghazi, that attack, and I think Biden was, they call it, a bunch of malarkey. Like, and I always said, that was the big Paul Begala talking head Democratic point. That was the knockout Lloyd Benstein type punch to Dan Quayle. And you talk about really groping for a victory. I didn't see it, and I thought Biden did do well on the domestic issues, and really caught Ryan with a haymaker on, well, you asked for stimulus money for your district. If he would have stayed with that, I think he would have annihilated him, but he didn't.
Okay, John, we know where you are, John. You want to get it off your chest, and so we can all move on.
All right, I'll give you a couple perspectives on the various debaters. I thought Ryan was composed, eloquent, reasoned, and statesmanlike. And I think he convinced a lot of people who hadn't been familiar with him that he does have a tenacity of purpose, and he's not going to be shaken from his firm resolve by the frenzy of the roaring media with scurrilous attacks, and he's going to actually apply himself to the problems of the nation. And I think he inspired confidence. Whether you agree with him or not, he's a very serious individual.
Oh, I think he is too, but let me raise a question. You didn't think at times he was just simply outright lying about his positions? See, I see them as just not being truthful.
An example, Manny? No, not at all.
I'll give you an example that, John, you've got a degree in economics. There's no way in God's earth, or any other planet for that matter, that the Republicans' position regarding dropping the debt based upon alleged increases in supposed job employment, which is not only unrealistically but mathematically been proven to be false, can do what they say it is, but yet they keep saying it is, yet everybody who does the math says this is just a big lie.
Well, that's simple math. Economics, Manny. I encourage you to read Arthur Laffer.
I've read Laffer. Laffer does not make that statement at all.
But when you take someone off public assistance and get them a job, it's a double win because you're not only getting people more on the tax roll, but you're taking someone off. So it's common sense.
Well, that I agree with, but that's not possible in our society.
No, why it's not possible.
So wait a minute. Where is he going to find these jobs for these people who are on welfare and be able to achieve this goal that he's claiming?
Have you seen Steve Wynn lately? Create a positive business environment. Demand will increase. We need a prosperous middle class, but
okay,
you can't
so
have that.
Steve Wynn is increasing his business base by going to foreign countries and opening up gambling businesses. How does that affect the United States?
Look what he did for Las Vegas. Why isn't he doing that
he
now?
He didn't do that for Las Vegas. You act like he's the only one who ever went to Las Vegas.
Paul Sheldon Adelson as well. There's
Sheldon,
there's a lot of people who have provided thousands of jobs there.
And I agree.
John, I have to ask, should Romney win the election? A sunset protection going to be in a hiring frenzy?
Well, he's got you, John.
In business, Simon, I'm nonpartisan.
But that's my point, John, is that right now, as I say all the time, we have a corporate structure that has found a way to support themselves, make more profits without hiring anybody. What is going to change to make those people suddenly think it's in their financial benefits to hire people?
Well, maybe if we didn't have the highest corporate tax rate in the world, that would help.
No, it wouldn't help, John. It wouldn't change things at all. It would
I think it's a, the answer is like D, all of the above. Manny, I agree with you. I don't see where Romney's going to get 12 million jobs. I don't see where Obama's going to create one job in the present economy in the next 4 years, unless major changes are done. I mean, and I think the whole fun part of this election is, you know, the debate, and I'm being sarcastic, is come January 2nd, which is right around the corner, we've got huge things going on that Congress has not acted on. As a matter of fact, I think they've all gone home to their home districts and are, you know, all running for re-election or whatever. But that whole the automatic cuts come in. There's all sorts of things that happen that they weren't able to do during the debt crisis last year. And that all comes the next year, right in January 2nd. And if Romney wins, he's facing that. He's facing, you know, the Congress is, you know, going to fight him which way. We talk about it many times. And I don't see where the jobs are going to come from either, especially if he's big on defense industry not getting cut. And I believe, if, correct me if I'm wrong, the defense industry is facing a huge, massive cut come January 1st of next year.
Well, I agree, and I agree, and that's my point is I don't think either side can do what they claim to do, and because our problems are more fundamental than all that. And that's why I'm chiding John about it, who's got an economics degree and thinks this kind of voodoo economics, oops, I think I've heard that term before, are going to work. And I might point out, how did Reagan raise the economy? By increasing our debt, because the debt increased more under Reagan than any other president before him. And I compliment him on solving the problem, but his method of solving the problem would not be acceptable to Republicans of today. Do you disagree, John? I know you're a big Reagan file. Do you think Ronald Reagan would be acceptable to today?
I'll tell you now what, before John...
and he had a Democratic Congress.
Gives us his viewpoint. I really want to ask Peter. Peter, you are known as the voice of reason. You've heard the start of what is likely going to be a heated debate this afternoon. Where do you stand on these issues?
Well, it really is a great start, and I was anxious to keep it going there. Secondly, I was in a mediation this week, and a mediator also called me the voice of reason, and it really alarmed me. I thought, oh my gosh, I must be becoming the voice of reason.
Don't confuse our platitudes for reality so quickly.
Well,
the Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away quickly. Good,
and
Peter.
So there it is. I have lost my title already. real quickly on the debates, I always think that the real power of the debates comes in the ramification and the ripples that come after them, the commentary and the talk. And by far the greatest amount of commentary and talk concerned Biden's animated character traits and all of that. And if that's the real topic of conversation for the most part after that kind of debate, then I actually think that favors the incumbent party, in this case, the Democratic Party. I saw no other real power shift that arose from the vice presidential debates at all. But the point that's being made now about how we have some really intractable problems that are coming right around the start of the new year is really a very, very good one. And I'm confident that whoever gets in office is going to address them in some emergency way once they get in, and everything's just going to be in a kind of pause mode until it's clear who the commander in chief is going to be.
Good answer.
Do you feel that way because you think the Republicans are hoping and praying that's going to happen, which I believe is why they've been stonewalling on a great many issues?
I just think in politics, every opportunity each party has to fight and combat the other, they seem to fully avail themselves of, to, you know, regardless of how it plays out in the country or who gets hurt by it or which have you. And each party will dig in and hold to its position until it's clear it can no longer do so. And some may even dig in longer than that.
Peter, that's a great point about either party. Rand Paul, who I'm very fond of as a, you know, the senator, Ron Paul's son, a lot of people don't realize this. We do, I'm sure. We all pay attention and maybe too much attention. He's he was trying to hold up aid to three countries, foreign aid, until they could protect us, whatever, you know, and do the right thing in the embassy. That would be, of course, Libya, Egypt, and Syria. And he made a lot of enemies in the Senate. Most of the enemies are coming from his own Republican Party, John McCain and Lindsey Graham. He started running ads against any senator, mostly Democratic senators, who are favoring sending aid to these countries while our ambassadors and others have been murdered and all sorts of questions still out there. And he's become a target by both parties, and he's a Republican. And he's got Republicans coming after him with, you know, in cahoots with the Democrats for whatever reason, who want to maintain the status quo, where I think a lot of us on the panel have all agreed that we're sending way too much money overseas, and it's even worse that we're sending money to countries that are using that money to kill our own people. And
well, you know, you know, we've got to underscore something there, Sam. No, we agree, but we also, let's just put it where it's at. This is a problem because foreign aid in our country exists primarily of money being sent to American corporations to provide goods to people over, you know, to countries overseas, whether they want or need them. So in many respects, the reason why McCain and the rest of them are taking this position is because it's in the interest of the people who support them, namely lobbyists. And that's the problem.
Yeah, well, I totally agree with you. And I think, you know, maybe we talk about where these 12 million jobs going to come from or whatever amount or who's going to help the economy. And until someone does what you just said, man, he said it earlier, you know, and John, I have to agree with him. Why would a corporation, if they've got more money than they've ever had before, some of these giant corporations, they're laying off people, they're cutting people. Why would they hire anybody?
Yeah.
I wouldn't. they're doing what they're supposed to do, reward their stockholders, and they're doing it at everybody else's expense, and that culture has to be changed.
I want to ask Peter a question along that same line. Peter, we all deal with an economy of scale when you're in school. An economy of scale is something that most Americans sadly are becoming familiar with because it means that you add a number of different companies of similar use and interest to your corporation, and by doing so, you reduce your overhead, and therefore you reduce the number of people because you no longer have to have 100 people to do your billing you don't have to bring the 100 employees from the other company to do your billing because, after all, you already have your employees. So what's happening is they're using economies of scale to save money, which is the principal reason for the mergers. And anyone who's watched this has watched banks lay off scores and scores of American employees by consolidating their interests in that manner. Anybody disagree with that?
I agree with the general proposition that businesses everywhere, large and small, are doing absolutely everything in their power to save money. And the primary method of doing that is laying off workers, cutting back on jobs, and that any way and every way that they can do that, that's what they're going to try to do.
Right. Okay, so we've got to let John rant.
Oh, thanks, Simon. I would like to give my take on Biden's performance.
So you have Joe on your mind. Isn't that a song by John Denver? Anyway.
Simon, I wanted to say that silly, inane laughter of yours has been done. Last week, I think. All right. I thought it was the Democratic strategy to for Biden to go out there emotionally revved up, passionate, to offset the performance by the eloquent mannequin with the teleprompter. So that's why I think he acted in that capacity. I think he wanted to be seen as the avuncular, harmless non-entity and not the incompetent, inept imbecile. That's alliteration, Simon. And I think that Biden He wanted the debate to degenerate into opinion, whereas Ryan was well-versed on the issues. He's not. So it became nothing more than Monday morning quarterbacking on his part, where everything becomes opinion. For instance, Manny's talking about the football game. It becomes, well, my team lost, but it was because of the officials, or our best player got injured. And you're not looking at the scoreboard. It's just excuses.
That's the same whiny excuse you just used.
Well, mine's an analogy, Manny.
Oh, I see. Oh, okay. So there's a difference between that and an analogy. Okay,
a football analogy. I was thinking with the replacement officials that this administration made them look professional and conscientious. So that's why I use that football analogy.
Oh, okay.
But I think Biden, essentially, the guy has the attention span of a goldfish, and that's why he was laughing uncontrollably, a little unbalanced, because he's incapable of engaging in any type of productive dialogue. He's not well-versed in the facts, and he's perfectly willing to just argue opinion because you can't be wrong.
Okay, now let's come back to the other one, John.
Also, Manny,
wait a minute. You're not going to slip and slide past what Sam just said about
right.
the fact that it doesn't matter what's being said. He can't produce and the Republicans can't produce, which makes what he's saying a big lie. How do you get around that?
That's an assumption on your part, Manny.
No, that's the simple
fact they
John.
Can't produce, but Ryan haven't been given the opportunity.
Every person in this country who crunches numbers laughs at him.
I'm not talking about Paul Krugman. I'm talking about legitimate.
We're talking about Paul Ryan, whose philosophies are a joke and have been laughed at for years now. Are you going to tell me that people haven't been laughing at his theory?
I don't know what you mean by laugh at. The guy is cutting edge. He's promoting freedom. The history of the world, we've always had centralized government. That's the norm.
You're not making sense, John.
John,
think about it.
John,
John from himself.
Gentlemen, I have bad news. I have real bad news. I think the Mayans are right. The Browns won a football game today.
Oh, my God.
it's been almost 11 games going back to 2 years. They've won a game. The Mayans are right.
Sam, the Browns won, the Browns won, but the state of Ohio lost.
Yeah, because they played the Bengals.
Who was playing quarterback?
I just want to switch gears here. I've got one in Mississippi and three of you in California, right?
Right.
Okay. The three, Simon and Peter, John and Manny, do you guys get the same amount of ads that we're getting?
It's horrible.
I can't. I mean, is Romney even spending money in California?
No, not very much.
I haven't seen one ad, Sam, but I don't watch commercials.
How about you, Simon? Do you get any ads in Mississippi?
Oh, we get ads, but, Mississippi, last time I checked, was solidly red. So, yeah, there's no
I always knew there were communists down there.
There's no point in... Obama or Biden coming to Picayune. I mean, it's not going to make a blind bit of difference. And this is what bothers me. I mean, we live in a country, 50 states, 320 million people.
350.
And Manny loves to correct me on these minor gaffes. But, the facts of life are that elections are won and lost over just a few places. Yeah, and there's nothing that the Democrats could do in Mississippi. I think it's fairly doubtful that
that the Republicans could, you know, do much in some other states. So, yeah, they spend gobs and gobs of time in places like Youngstown, Ohio.
It is amazing. I mean, you know, it's nonstop. It's 24/7 Democrat Republican. Paul Ryan's been here three times already, and in my county, it's 80%. It's 78% registered Democrats. Yet he's still here. And either they're wasting their money, or the state is that much up in the grabs where they can cut into voter suppression by coming here, hoping to get or get Republicans to come up to more than 22% or something, and it might help them in, throughout the state. It's mind-boggling.
Well, you know, I think there's a general proposition, as you've heard so many times. Only times the Republicans win the election is when they win Ohio. So I guess you have to see that as some kind of base jump off or any strategy from the Republican Party. And it may well be. But, you know, Sam, coming back to your comments about where the directions are going, you have to remember that even going back, 80, 90 years ago, there weren't these polls. So people really didn't know who was in front. They may have thought they did. And just take a look at the headline, Dewey wins the election. I mean, you know, basically Dewey didn't win the election, and had they done the kind of polling up to the end that they should have, they might have noticed that. But the fact remains that polling is fairly recent, and for centuries in our country, people went to the ballot box not knowing who was going to win, and in many respects, that was better. I don't know if anyone disagrees with that, but I think it was better. Peter, you're somewhat of a student of that kind of history. Do you see that as a factor also?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. The fact this started, I think, a few elections ago. They were starting to broadcast reports from the East Coast, and it contaminated the California elections, and people just stopped showing up. But I do think it has a definite impact on that kind of thing. And I also think it's interesting that somebody pointed out earlier, and I hadn't really noticed it, but I see almost no advertising at all for Romney. I suddenly realized that. I hadn't been paying attention to that before, but I just don't see any advertising here for Romney.
And the only reason it came to the state recently was to raise money. I mean, he has no other reason to be here because he's got really no other support here.
Very
so interesting. Though, because of that, and I think what Simon was saying about the whole 50 states, you know, I'm sure they're not spending any money at Romney camp in, you know, North Dakota, nor is Obama spending any money in Massachusetts. And they've got all this money, so 50 states get bundled down. There's really only 15 states, I believe, that are right now, quote-unquote, battleground states.
Right.
And we're the ones getting all the money dumped on us, and everybody else, you know, isn't. And, you know, I guess that isn't fair if you really think about it.
Well, is that all bad for you guys? I don't know.
But Sam, where does the money go? You know, you live in Ohio. It's obviously a battleground state. What I see is millions and millions of dollars being spent on TV ads. That doesn't help the local economy, does it?
It sure helped the local economy, the local TV stations and their owners and their
right.
You know, people who work for them. Because I will say, they do run national ads that go through all the battleground states, but they do, in conjunction with where to buy them on local TV, they do have to find local ad people, local buy people. I think the term they use is they reserve time months in advance.
Right.
And then someone from the national campaign will come in and meet with someone locally, maybe a coordinator for the Northeast Ohio or Southeast Ohio, whatever. And then those people help them go, no, look, you want to be on this high school football game. It's, you know, 10,000 people will be listening to it. It's, you know, it's a big one. You don't want to be on the, you know, the XY, you don't want to be on the poker hour. You want to be on the high school football game things. And I think that's what happens. And so some local people do. They don't film anything, but definitely local TV. The radio ads, guys, it's just amazing. I've seen, it's like you can't even hear a talk radio show, whatever you're listening to, or even a song or anything else, because it's nonstop ads from both camps. And, of course, throw in the Senate races, the congressional races, the county commissioner races, and it's just they're just coming at you so much. It's a big, to me, when I like politics, it's a big turnoff.
Yeah. You know, and Sam, I have an observation for you. The Republican corporate interests are spending more money domestically on this election than they do on jobs. And that's the reality.
No, I don't doubt that. It's shocking. A friend of mine was showing me the amounts of money that the Republicans raised and spent in 08 versus now. People would be shocked. I mean, Obama had raised a lot of money on his own, too, and certain Democrats. You know, that it's amazing, too. But this year, it is just, it's like a 180-degree turn for Republican interest as far as money raising goes. I don't know if they knew McCain never was going to win or whatever the reason was, but it definitely, the money is definitely there this year.
Yeah.
And I think that's why the race is competitive.
Well, I'll give you an interesting one, because I was going to send basically Simon an article about the ongoing battles here in California over the what would be described as the labeling of genetically modified foods. And right now, corporate interests have spent over $37 million trying to defeat this, with Monsanto, not surprising to Simon, in the lead with over $8 million spent and just opposing the labeling of genetically modified foods. And, of course, they went to Stanford, which is the biggest whore in this business around, with their right-wing philosophies, bringing professors and giving some explanation that's so grossly untrue, you have to ask, how much did you get paid to do this? How much does Stanford get out of it? I mean, and basically that's where we are in this country. They spent more money. If they would put that into jobs instead of trying to influence the election, there'd be more people working in this country. But they don't care about that. And therein lies the flaw to everything that John says. He assumes corporate America has this trickle-down theory, really want to provide jobs and give a shit about Americans. They don't. They only care about their bottom line. The same way I point out, the only way they ever bring up, they don't lobby on issues of, for example, involving oil. They just raise oil prices. And, John, since our last conversation, I took a look at a few oil issues for you. And probably the most interesting one to me is the fact that right now oil companies are earning more money than they ever have, and yet prices are still going up. And why are they going up? Because they're market-driven, not the reasons you state. And as long as they think people will pay, they will continue to raise prices. When we get a competition, as in some other thing, whether it's solar or a banana peel or Back to the Future, and you stuff it in your car and they have competition, they'll lower prices. But they're not going to lower it, and corporate America isn't going to change. And that was the problem with Ronald Reagan changing the structure of our company and not enforcing the issues involving antitrust. And since then, prices have gone up and our entire country has gone down the toilet because there's no competition. And with the loss of competition has gone the loss of jobs because of the economy of scale. So what we're doing is, by these same failed philosophies of the Republicans, and I agree with the statement to put in Romney is to put back in the same policies of W that caused our country to be in this decline. And one of the things we should have trapped Ryan on is the fact when he says, well, look, he lost X amount of jobs for sure. Well, of course he did. He inherited a nightmare from that idiot Bush, threw our country into an absolute depression. And you can try and justify this all the way you want, John, but the facts speak for themselves. And basically, Obama didn't cause this. Bush did. And you Republicans constantly blame him. I wish you would at least be objective. So
Manny, you're being mean. I mean,
I hope so.
You know, John's going to be having a sugar low and need a Snickers bar.
Well, when I'm done, he's going to need a suppository.
That's a good one.
I've been listening to John in this whole bit about the Republicans. I listened to him whack on poor, Biden, who I oftentimes disagree with, but doesn't deserve this knee-jerk criticism that John throws at him so readily. You know, he basically is not the fault of all of this. The fault of all of this lies in what Bush leftists, the messy leftists, and the unwillingness of Republicans to ever address any of these issues. And their only interest is to get Obama out of office. They may way well succeed. But I think, as others have pointed out, he is not going to walk in. When I looked at Ryan Duthie, oh, well, we're just going to walk in there and we're going to talk to the other party because, gee, he did it in what do you call it, in Massachusetts. I almost fell out of my chair laughing at him. Does he really believe that crap, John? Does he believe it?
I'm chewing on some ice, man. He's calming down. All right, so, yeah.
I'll give you something to chew on, John.
Let me take umbrage with that suppository comment, although possibly accurate hurt. All right, let me say a couple things here. Nice to see with that diatribe that you still consider thoughtful reflection a lost opportunity.
At least for you.
All right. As I see it, we're talking about liberty here in the future. And I just like to tell people that liberty, it withers away. It's not going to be torn down like Statue of Liberty, like Saddam Hussein's statue. That's not the way it's going to go. It's going to be lessened by... It'll be under the veneer or guise glow of these newly discovered freedoms, like labeling men he's talking about. They'll give you free health care, contraception, college education if you're 40 years old. And what it's going to come down to is, you know, like this war on obesity, say. Who's against obesity? You can't be unless you're cruel. But what it degenerates into is the Secretary of Agriculture becomes nothing more than the national chef. And I like to order a la carte. That's why I eat Snickers bars as a protest. So Secretary of Agriculture is now going to regulate the caloric intake, which I'm sure you're for, Manny, at school lunches. And in the past, this is why I think private enterprise has to govern, because I remember what Oliver Twist said about, please, sir, can I have some more? And, the audacity asking for more when he wasn't given more because the orphanage wanted to maximize their profits. Now, when the poor kid asks for more, he's going to be told, you're allotted your daily portion by the Dietary Commission. Like, that's something positive. Either way, the kid's still hungry. And you're talking about all these labeling, Manny, and more regulations. You can fine or even prosecute rogue corporations, but a bureaucracy is there forever. And I just don't see the checks and balances when the government's involved, because they're immune to any type of criticism. They're there forever. And that's what I would just warn people about. Once they become involved, it might be they're going to tell you, we have noble intentions. But either way, you're not going to be able to afford the food, the gas. You're not going to be asked for more because they know what's best for you. And just
well, first
of
all, John, let me correct you on a number of things. This is, and again, John, you bought about 10 copies of my books and never read one of them.
You know food labeling is going to increase costs and poor
people.
No,
it isn't. That's John, that's the big lie.
Can afford it?
Pardon me? It's a big lie, John. Read my lips. If you read the book, we provide you surveys from people who are considered rather conservative, like the University of Wisconsin, who set forth sufficient facts to show that it's a big lie by Monsanto. It does not happen.
Well, Manny, can I say
wait a minute, John, why don't you listen for once, okay, about this? We've discussed this a number of times. If you take a look at those surveys and opinions by noted writers and not left-wingers, but people who are concerned about food, you will find that more food is grown naturally than is grown through these genetically modified foods. Also, our listeners should be aware that these foods contain E. coli, Bacteroides, which is a poison. that they are infused with Roundup, which you put on your lawn to kill, you know, basic bugs, that people who eat this basically have this explode in their stomach, including me, because it nearly killed me. So I have a real strong reaction to them. And at the end of the day, if you ask yourself, anyone listening should ask themselves, how much kidney dialysis is going on in the world right now, and why? The reason why is because of genetically modified foods poisoning our foods. Why is there more obesity? Why is there more diabetes? Why is it all of it? It's tied to these foods. And by the way, it doesn't do it. The reason they went to genetically modified foods is twofold. One, because it contains this pesticide Roundup, which you put on your lawn, that they claim kills bugs. Well, the reality is it doesn't kill bugs, that they have to use 35 different sprays more to kill the bugs because it doesn't kill the bugs. So here you have a product that doesn't do what it says, whose sole interest is to enrich Monsanto. And then Monsanto claims the seeds are sterile. Nobody can reuse them without their opinion. So very shortly, one corporation is going to own the rights to every food you eat, which is sort of like the oil situation. There's no alternative oil, so you have to pay the price. Shortly, there'll be no alternative to food. And do you know, John, you're someone who's talking about foreign trade. Do you know that other countries refuse to accept genetically modified food, including Mexico? And when Mexico refuses anything from the United States, I want to throw up, because they shouldn't be refusing anything.
Okay. I have to ask the question, and I know you can answer it. The Supremes have taken on the Monsanto seed case, which proves conclusively that the soybeans, are not sterile. Where do you see that case heading? And more importantly, where do you see the Supreme Court heading in the event, the unfortunate event, that Romney wins?
Well, they support Romney rather strongly. But let me underscore what the problem is. They claim that their product, these seeds, genetically modified seeds, cannot replicate themselves. Therefore, you have to buy them from every year. But that's not what's happening. What's happening is they are replicating themselves. So what they're doing is suing everybody who accidentally grows any of their product. So at the end of the day, what happens is that they're suing people who didn't know they were growing this stuff by mistake. So what's going to happen is that they're going to eventually gain control of them. People who have been contaminated will be treated as if they bought a seed from Monsanto. Therefore, at the end of the day, Monsanto's is going to control everybody's crop, which is what they have in mind. And what bugs me about John's position is I know how much John is for freedom, but everything that genetically modified foods stand for is not freedom. It's controlled by one major, all-encompassing corporation who wants to take over the world. So at the end of the day, what happens is your freedom's gone, John, and you won't be able to choose at all. The
well, Benny, who's been in charge the last 4 years? Where's the regulation?
The regulation, and by the way, I thought you were against regulation. And the issue of regulation is very simple. Monsanto is one of the largest contributors to politicians in the United States. In fact, that mental midget Clarence Thomas was once one of their lawyers. And talk about someone with a brain the size of a pea who through politics became a Supreme Court judge. This, you know, basically, and by the way, he wrote the leading opinion last time on genetically modified foods and refused to recuse himself, which has to be the worst conflict of interest I've seen in the last 100 years. So what you see is right back to our discussion about we need to control corporations in the U.S., and that will in turn change the job situation, because guess what? They don't care about you, John. They don't care if you're out of work. They don't care if any American's out of work as long as they have some kind of profit. And one of the
we're all the architects of our own failure of fortune. I don't expect Monsanto to look out for me, believe me.
Well, but you do expect them to tell you the truth.
Not really.
So you think you should allow Monsanto and other major corporations to rape and pillage the United States?
It's not me. Obama's in charge. You should be taking up issue with him.
Well, Obama and the Democrats are the ones who are trying to pass this through. Wait a minute, John. Why is this on a ballot? It's because the major corporations have been successful with their economic might in preventing Congress from enacting laws. I think all of us agree would like to enact a law that divests Congress of all these perks that don't go to regular Americans.
Afraid about poor people being able to eat.
John, wasn't it W that received a whole pile of cash from Monsanto?
I don't know, Simon.
Yes.
You know, John brings up one good point, though.
Thanks, Sammy.
He does. And it's about the bureaucracy. He's 100% right about that. I'm on your side about Monsanto, Manny. Since I read your books, when I go to a grocery store or any place else, there's a lot of other people, I am amazed at how obese people have gotten. And I know they just didn't drop out of space. It's what they've been eating and not exercising and all that sort of stuff. And it is going to hurt our country because it's a health issue, no question about it. And the more I dug from your book, opened my eyes to that, I saw that. But on the same token, John is right, though, but the good intentions of government to regulate and make sure the Monsantos of the world don't do what they're not supposed, do the bad things. The bureaucracies created, they become terrible. EPA, I think, is one of the big examples of that. And
right.
Because they're bought and sold by those same corporations, and you brought it up before, Manny, that Monsanto has either hired some of these people to come work for them who've been in the government or they did work for them. I mean, they've got the wolves watching the hen house every which way you would look.
I agree. And with that, I agree. And that's why I say to you all the time, we need to deal with this with our government. And by the way, there's nothing about this labeling act in California that really requires any injection of government because a citizen can raise the issue. And the bottom line is, all it says is if you have it in your food, you have to put a label on it. What is so difficult about that? Why are they spending $38 million opposing something that says, gee, you just have to put it on your label? And the reason is because they're basically dishonest.
How much is that going to translate, Manny, onto the grocery shelf? That's my concern.
Well, my personal response.
If they said Roundup was used in a Snickers bar, would you eat a Snickers bar?
Yes, he would.
I don't even look at the label. I don't buy it to read.
You have to. You have to in today's world. I mean, since I've read Manny and Ashley's books and stuff, I go to try to buy more healthy food or eat it. And the cost of that, I don't know how people who are struggling to make ends meet, they can't afford to eat healthy, so to speak. Do you agree with me, Manny?
Yes and no, because you can go to, but that's not the point. The point is they need to have a choice. And if it's their choice, like John, to eat a Snickers bar and not read the label, that's John's prerogative, and he has the right to do that. And we'll all watch as John limps back and forth to the doctor with illnesses. That's absolute right. I don't question that. But I do think everyone else who may prefer to live their life otherwise should be able to look at a label and know what's inside of something.
Okay, I think it's time for the voice of reason. Peter, you must be just snickering.
That was pretty good, Simon.
You know, there's so much of what everyone has said that it has a lot of truth to it. It really is. For me personally, I'm not as expert in these nutritional areas as Manny and Ashley are, but I have spent the better part of my life trying to understand, the relationship between, my health and the foods I eat. And I have studied as much of this stuff as I possibly can. You know, I, I tried to be an athlete for a number of years, and it was very important to me. And I studied labels, and I studied what people ate, and I tried to understand what was being put on the dinner table. And, you know, in my humble opinion, I really think that the food that America is producing for its own citizenry is one of the biggest problems in this country right now. And I don't think that it's going to hurt the country. I think it's hurting it right now. And I think we talk about the expenses of health care, and we talk about, you know, regulation and all of this. I really believe that an ounce of prevention is worth 10 pounds of cure. And when I look around the world today, America, coast to coast, everywhere I go, and I believe, unfortunately, I'm sorry to say this, but I believe it's far worse in the Midwest than it is in, for instance, places like Los Angeles, but it's still terrible here. I see us as poisoning our own citizens. We're killing them. We're killing them. And we're giving them diseases, and we're rendering them incapable of leading healthy lives. How many times do you watch anything on television and you're inundated with advertisements for drugs and pharmaceuticals? I don't view that as something that's completely independent from what people are consuming. We're becoming an incredibly debilitated culture that, in my opinion, is poisoning its citizenry on one hand and then charging them massive amounts of money on the other to provide them with pharmaceuticals to address the many problems that they're causing in one hand. And this is one of the unfortunate drawbacks of a capitalist society, and capitalism does produce great works of wonder and great positive contributions to the world, but it brings with it at the same time these huge great negatives. And I don't know how you combat all these forces. I don't know how you create the proper watchdog system and checks and balances, because it's true. One of the bureaucracies that's responsible for policing this type of stuff ends up becoming as bad as what it's trying to investigate. And that's an age-old human tale. All I know is everybody's got to try to become more aware of it and do whatever they can to help each other, to protect themselves. You know, I watched, I told Manny about this, and I'm sorry I'm going on a little bit at length about this, but I told Manny that I watched a rerun of the movie Super Size Me. And you all may remember this. This was back in the early 2000s, and this guy went around going from McDonald's to McDonald's eating things, and his little thing was if they asked him if he wanted to supersize it, he would say yes. He wouldn't volunteer that, but as soon as they asked, he would say yes. Well, basically, in 30 days of eating nothing but a purely McDonald's diet, he almost died. But they profiled a man who, I don't know where he lived, but he was in a hospital bed, and he was extraordinarily obese, and he was suffering from acute diabetes. And he said, I had to stop working because I went blind, and fortunately, it only lasted about a week, and I got my vision back, well, most of it anyway. And he was going through this you know, complicated gastric bypass surgery to try and save his life. And it was revealed that he had this 64-ounce container of a beverage container, and he would drink three of those a day, 64 fluid ounces of some sort of soda pop. I don't know what it was. And it darn near killed him. And I think they saved his life, and I think they helped him out, and I think they you know, shortened his did his gastric bypass surgery, and you know, he's presumably okay today. He's doing better. But this is symbolic of what's going on in our world. We create these massive problems. We nearly kill ourselves in the process. Financial collapse, physical collapse, health collapse. And then we try to come up with these solutions to try and address it after the fact. And it's obvious that, you know, an ounce of prevention would be worth a pound of cure. So I'll shut up now.
No, you're doing great.
Yeah, you're on
that was one of the finest you know, speeches I've heard. You know, Manny and I ran a radio program for well over a year railing on this subject. And I think he managed to encapsulate it very well.
Maybe better than I did in my own book.
Well, it's a shame. It's a shame. We are a great nation. We're a great nation. We're capable of doing great and amazing things. And we have a lot of diverse people that bring us great strength. And the diversities that we have in this program are a sign of our great strength. And that's what America stands for, diversity and strength. But we're killing us. We're killing our own people. We're poisoning them to death.
You know, when you look at Obamacare, Affordable Care Act, we would be better taking all that money and cleaning up our food sources, and we would save more money than we would enacting any of these laws. And Peter, I want to point out something that about your discussion is all of these various drugs that are prescribed to so-called stop all these problems are made by the same companies who sell you the food.
It does not surprise me at all. I do not know that, but I've always suspected it. You know, on the one hand, they put the quote-unquote nourishment on your table. On the other hand, they sell you the cure, and I could just see someone saying it's a perfect system. It's like watching a movie about an arms dealer who sells to both sides. It just, you know, I must admit, it's sometimes it seems hopeless. But, you know, the only thing we can do is keep trying to address the problem. And I do think feeding people healthier food would be the best healthcare change that we could possibly imagine.
Yeah, and I do believe John cited specifically the schools, although I haven't had as strong a position on the schools as others. The fact is, yes, it would really change the makeup of children. If you, there are a variety of different specials.
School diets are horrible. They're horrible.
Have you seen some of these shows lately about
how
they're moving all the school diets around at different times of the day, and kids are being forced to eat lunch at 9 a.m., and then when you look what their diet is, oh, my God, it's scary. And then we expect these children to perform better and test and compete with people in other countries. It isn't going to work, and that's what
they did. When did we stop having we used to go, when I went to school, I would say 90% of the kids brought their own lunch into school. I don't know what it was like when you guys grew up or whatever. And then all of a sudden, I had my own children and I have grandchildren, it's like no one brown bags. We started doing it. Like, no, they offer more. The school has food. Don't worry about it. The cafeteria, you'd walk in, you'd see a Coca-Cola machine in the cafeteria or candy things. This one, and that was never around when I was a kid.
Well, just imagine this thought, Sam. If you gave your choice between the junk food that's sold in the stores and a nutritious meal, your children that, don't you think most of the time they go, oh, it's okay, Dad, I'll just have some candy for lunch? Because that's the way kids are.
Right.
Well, it's an important thing you say.
I guess it came in with the corporations would lobby the politicians, in this case the school board, and they would put the machines in and serve the food, and that was the end of it. And it became easier in a tough economic times with mom and dad both working, or if there is a mom and dad. So it's easier for the parents to send the kids to school without making a nutritional meal at home. I guess that's the reason.
It's a convenience cost that parents probably are willing to pay, but they also infiltrate the minds of the children, because the children, the corporations are very savvy. They get to their consumer market as soon as they possibly can to start getting in their mindset. And they start to get to the kids every way they can, and the kids come home and say things like, I don't want to take my peanut butter and jelly sandwich to school. They're eating, you know, hamburgers and french fries, and I want to sit with them and eat what they eat. And it's a mass system. It's, you know, it's subtle.
It becomes an embarrassment if you're bringing a brown bag.
Well, you know, the kids don't want to do it, and the parents say you know, we talked about it earlier. People are working hard. People are trying to survive, you know. You've got single parents out there. You've got two-job parents. You've got parents who are going bankrupt, losing their homes. You know, they just want their lives to be easier. They want to try to concentrate on taking care of the basic needs that they have. They want to be able to trust entities to take care of them. They want to be able to to put some of the decision making off their shoulders because they're faced with so much of it every single day. They need help.
Okay, I'm going to break in.
Well, okay, but
we have a caller on the line. Do you fancy a random question from a caller?
Sure.
Okay. Whoops. Well, assuming the switchboard will actually do it. We have a caller from the 610 area code. What's your name and what's your question or comment for us?
My name is Jacob Dillon. I'm 62, and am I on the air?
Yeah.
Okay. Before I tell you what I have to say, I want to give you a little bit of backstory on my situation. You see, I was born in West Philadelphia. I was raised there.
Okay. Let's cut to the chase. What's the question?
Well, it's just the neighborhood I grew up in was really rough, and the bottom line is, at the end of the day, my mom made me move out to California, specifically in a rich southern district, and the school district was just so much better there than it was back in West Philly. You know, I used to get in a lot of fights, specifically on this one playground, and I feel for the kids in that area, and you know, just my brother Carlton, he was always there for me, but I, you know, at the time I called him short. We didn't really get along, but yeah, I mean, what do you think about that?
Okay, but this has nothing to do about politics or food.
We need better schools, though. I mean, people agree on that, right? Yeah.
Well, let's answer your question in a thing. Is we need to address all the aspects of school, including the ones you're raising. And across the board, schools have become an argument for social policies of various different political parties instead of being concerned about the welfare of the students who attend them. And therein lies the big problem with all of this. Is you point out, I think, a very important fact, and that is that the issue involving the students themselves were being put on the back burner for so many issues, including some of these. And therein lies the biggest problem in our country, is we're not searching for what works best with our children or works best in politics. We're fighting over other issues, and that doesn't work. Whether it's food or whatever, we need to address the politics of our country, and we need to specifically address how we can make it better for children, including food. And John's position that this isn't important, I imagine if you went to school in South Philly, the food served in the school was horrible. Am I right?
Oh, very, very right. And I think that if we implemented some form of dictatorship, then possibly, you know, food distribution might be better in some ways, you know?
We might improve our food distributions with a dictatorship, but we won't improve anything else, that's for sure. So we appreciate your time. We'll keep those thoughts in mind, and we hope you have a wonderful Saturday.
Uh-huh.
So, this is Simon. Do you want to move on to something else?
Sure. All right. I want to go back to the debate. The Veep debate. And Martha Raddich, I thought, did quite a good job. Now, there's another presidential debate coming up on Tuesday, and CNN are fielding Candy Crowley. I'm curious to know what you guys think's going to happen on Tuesday. Is Obama going to come out swinging?
No, he's going to come out awake, that's for sure, right, guys? Because he can't sleep through another one of these.
He's gonna channel his inner Denzel Washington bad guy.
And I like that one.
he's gonna take off the Sidney Poitier demeanor that he has, and I really believe he's gonna channel that inner Denzel Washington bad guy. And I don't know how that's gonna play because he might come across as the quote unquote angry black man, and maybe might turn off people, but I do anticipate him to be very aggressive and come out that way, because I think that was part of Biden's thing. That was a little test marketing. If that played, maybe the president ought to play with it too. And I think it did play.
Good point.
Okay, there's another question. It did rear its ugly head in the vice president. Debate abortion. You know, what's going on there? That there seems to be a huge amount of flip-flopping going on. Anyone want to comment on will abortion rear its ugly head in Tuesday's debate?
Well, I don't believe it's on their actual list, but it certainly should, because it is an important issue for two reasons. One, he's flip-flopping, and that's deceitful, and it's one of the things that women complain most about him, is that Romney changes his position. And I think it hurts him because, as I pointed out, every woman I know has commented to me at some time or another, they will not vote for any man who is anti-abortion. While that may hold, there are women out there who support the anti-abortion position, they are really few in number compared to the others. So I think that's a problem.
All I want to ask, and then I want to listen to everybody else, is are these questions predetermined? I mean, the people in the town hall meeting, are they all giving questions to CNN, and then CNN's going to filter, they'll decide who gets to ask the questions?
No, the way it's done is the actual person who's doing it is the one who does her own questions. So she's totally responsible for the questions herself, and nobody knows what they are in advance.
Oh, so it's just the town hall people in the audience.
No. The moderator, Candy, what's her name?
Crowley
is the one who's, I always forget her name, is the one who gets to do her own questions. All of the other questions were done by the moderators. What happens is the candidates agree to a general topic, and then within that topic the questions they want to ask. So no one knows what's coming, and that way they've been able to supposedly protect the integrity of what the questions are going to be.
Okay, I'm sorry, because I was under the impression with the word town hall that it would be an open, she'd be a moderating, and they'd ask, someone would raise their hand, and it'd be, Joe Blow, hi, I'm from so-and-so, what's your stance on abortion? So it's not that way, okay.
No, that's what I understood from the briefings, unless this one's different from the others, but I doubt it. The old story, the debate's one thing, and the wrestling for the rules to do the debate or another, and that's always the problem with these debates is the wrestling.
Okay.
You know, if I could ask a question, my dad pointed out something the other day. He remembers when these debates were governed by the League of Women Voters. I don't know how far back that goes, but who makes decisions about who the moderator gets to be and how much power he or she has and who's in charge of the debate, if anyone, these days?
Debate commission.
What they do is both sides have a team, and that team actively negotiates, and then they try to figure out who they all agree is someone they can all accept as a moderator. So there's a real would you take, and then there's the politics of, oh, if we don't involve this network or that network, they'll be upset, and we can't afford to upset anyone. So it went from PBS to the respective CNN, et cetera, et cetera. And that's sort of the way that they appease everybody. So, yes, the League of Women Voters, in my time, and I'm giving away my age again, basically supervises. In fact, they created it. So so to a great extent, there was none of the media issues that we have now that I just described, where everybody had to appease somebody else. So all of these events are somewhat new in the process. That's
Peter, they actually started, as Manny rightfully said, the two teams, the Republicans and Democrats, right when the Republican primary began, or the primaries for the president, but Obama didn't have a challenger. That's when they started negotiating what we're watching, right, what is unfolding in front of us right now.
Right.
I mean, they've been doing this for like eight, and they meet in these rooms, and they're the ones who come up with the format after everybody get the piece of the pie, so to speak.
Very isn't there a loose commission called the Election Debate Commission?
The Presidential Debate Commission.
Right.
That's what it's called, yeah. And they each have so many people on. Manny's right. It's a bunch of Republicans and a bunch of the heavy hitters. They're all probably, you know, some retired senators, big wig donors, big wig chair people of their respective parties. And they hash this out. And it's all about, agreeing to the moderators and just and all that. Well, I think the biggest thing is what communities lobby to get the location. That's probably the biggest thing they deal with.
And they picked some smaller colleges to try to get it away to where they would have audiences that were really virgin in terms of political polling, and instead of in major cities where bombing them with ads and other things could affect them. But right now, these debates have become as large a political process as the elections themselves.
And I have to tell you, I've been amazed at the ones we've bought, the two we've bought. The audiences have been great. I mean, they have been. I'm surprised there hasn't been any booing, catcalling, or any of that,
well,
given how polarized our country is.
Well, no, that's been barred, and you can't be in the debates unless you agree not to participate in it. And they're told you'll be removed from the building immediately if you do.
Well, maybe I guess that explains why.
Right. I mean, it is strictly invite only. You're not going to invite someone that is going to say something stupid. But I want to ask a question of the panel. Good old Bill Clinton. I mean, he is a great talker. He's absolutely fabulous at talking. And he referred to Mitt the Moderate.
Well, he yeah, this, was.
this shift to the middle. What is going to be the effect on the Supreme Court if Mitt the Moderate gets in there?
I'm not sure there's going to be much of an impact, Manny, maybe you could help me out yet, but the justices seem fairly set for now. Do we anticipate any seats opening up anytime in the next 48 years?
Well, they claim there may be two of them, but I don't see it. I agree with you. I think that's much ado about nothing. I mean, in fact, that was one of the reasons why W, and including even his father, nominated people who were very, very young in order to pack the court for a long period of time, to use an expression. And that's what they have. They basically Thomas is very young. He's going to be there a long time, and whatever Democratic member of the court is there is not going to retire as long as there's a Republican president. We saw that with, I forgot his name, the last person. What's the name of the last justice who retired? I've slipped my mind.
Marshall?
Pardon me?
Marshall?
No, it was, no. It's sure. He was a moderate, and I think he was actually appointed by Bush or Reagan.
Oh, Stevens?
No, it was Souter.
Stevens, right.
Thank you. And you know, he was in no hurry to leave either. So quite frequently members of the Supreme Court, and I'm going back now a century or two, pick their time to leave the court to leave when a president of their preference is able to appoint whoever they feel it will carry on whatever their role is, because no one who sits on the Supreme Court wants to see a subsequent appointee just take them out, you know? You know, suddenly everything they worked for and every law that they passed, everything they believed in, is suddenly eliminated from the books, and most of them are really concerned about that.
I have a question for some of you more Obama-leaning members of the panel. Were you have you been shocked at the alleged bounce that Romney's gotten since the first debate?
No. And by the way, I'm not. I might be leaning that way because every time I start leaning towards voting for Romney, he issues one of these incredible proclamations that I know aren't true, and that's been my problem with him and others I've talked to. But no, I don't believe in the polls any more than you do, Sam. You and I have agreed that this is going to go on right until the last day, and some of it is because people like messing with the polls. Right now, I believe that people who say they aren't committed are committed. They know who they're going to vote for. And
I don't think there's that many. I don't know where they're finding anybody who's undecided. I've met a few, but not many. But the majority of people I've met have already decided who they're voting for, and it would take a major catastrophe by either candidate to change their minds.
I agree with you. But nevertheless, if approached by a survey, they probably play their cards pretty tight to the vest, because that just seems to be the American way of messing with today's surveys and polls. And I don't blame them. I don't like them. I don't like the phone calls, as I've pointed out. I don't participate. Well, like, I get one that calls me at 8:30 every night. Now, I really want to stop my life after a long day at 8:30 at night and talk to a polling service, particularly one who doesn't ask the right questions. And that's my other problem with these polls. On either side of the line, they don't ask the right questions. They ask the ones they want to ask, which are usually leaning towards whatever their bent is, Republican or Democrat, or they pick a selected list to call whose political affiliation moves right along with whatever they want survey. So what we have here right now are surveys that don't mean a hell of a lot, Sam. So, yes, I'm not surprised by the change, because like all statistics, as we all know, you have to examine the base of every statistic, right?
Oh, yeah, I agree. I just thought I was at one point I was it did appear until that debate that the political momentum was with the president and but Romney seemed to be able to chip that enough where it's amazing to me that the state of Pennsylvania is now a battleground state, because I'm right on the Pennsylvania border. We get a lot of Pittsburgh and Cleveland, in between the ads, and Western PA, it's up for grabs. And I never thought Pennsylvania would be up for grabs in this election, but now it appears to be. And that's got to be a bad sign for the incumbent.
If it's true, because one really doesn't know whether it's true. I mean, one has to look at these very, very carefully and not take them too seriously. And I agree wholeheartedly with Peter's thought. The real effect with these is, look, everybody likes a winner. You and I, all of us who deal with sports, know how odds change on sporting events and gambling events. It resembles more about who people think the winner will be. Well, if you think about that, then that means that a great many people are basically saying, well, maybe this guy's going to win or that guy's going to win, and maybe I want to support a winner in this. There's a lot of different psychologies that are going to come into play with these things. So every one of them affects these particular elections. So there's no simple answer to any of it. Anybody disagree with that?
John, you've been remarkably quiet.
Yeah, Simon, well, I'm learning at the knee of the master, Manny.
Yeah, right. Is this before or after you attacked me at lunch?
So what do you want me to do, Simon, opine real quick?
Sure.
All right, a couple things about follow up on the food issue. I kind of see it differently to contrast Peter's point. I think this is really motivated by the ads on TV and just were inundated with thin people. Like, I prefer the actresses 50 years ago who were natural and full body. Now they're like anorexic. And I think by constantly telling people, oh, you got to be thin, it's really affecting people's self-esteem, especially young girls. And I think we're having a lot of psychological problems. We got to just preach moderation and be yourself, not try to live up to any standard. And I really think that's becoming an issue just as much as obesity, because people are trying to live up to this false standard. And go ahead. I'd like to hear Peter, because I'd be interested.
I would like to say something in response to that, because I think you raise a very, very good point. And let me just delve a little bit more into my own personal history, probably more than anybody really cares to know. Now, if you met me today, and I do hope that one day we all get to sit down and meet each other. I would love to see everybody face-to-face. But if you met me today, you would probably, as most people do, describe me as being a bit on the thin side or a bit on the lean side. And it surprises people to know when I tell them that when I was a very young boy, I was grossly overweight. I was obese. I was teased. I was persecuted. I was ridiculed. I would cry sometimes in class because the teasing was so bad. I wasn't just plump. I was obese. And, there were pictures of me with a giant belly hanging over my belt. And this lasted right up until about the time before I went to high school. And I used to think in my mind that this was just the way I was. And I couldn't even imagine a day in my life when I would be able to shed this weight. I couldn't even imagine as a young man growing up. But I was determined to do it. It became, it didn't matter what the world thought. I just wanted to break out of it. And as soon as I got old enough to start making my own decisions and implementing them in my life, I took control. I didn't even know I was. But what was going on is my mother, and I love her dearly, but she would feed me, and I would eat a lot. I had a huge appetite, and she would feed me all the stuff that America was selling her. Oh, Kraft macaroni and cheese and these Hostess desserts and all this stuff. And I'm a big guy. I'm 6'4", 220. I would eat everything I got my hands on. And it was only when I got old enough to start taking control of my life that I was able to implement any kind of change. And then the change happened fairly dramatically. I'm convinced that most of America, having never gone through the shock of being incredibly obese, is being slowly fed an unhealthy diet over time. And they don't realize that it's creeping up over them over time. And it's like that analogy of, if you put a frog in a pot of cold boiling water, it tries to jump out. But if you put it in a pot of cold water and slowly heat it up, it just sits there and gets cooked to death. And so for me personally, I don't know if I'm right or wrong, but I believe that that's what's happening in our country. We've slowly, most people didn't have the experience like I did of being, fat on the front end and being unhealthy. It's slowly grown over time, and they develop a pattern of behavior, and they don't want to be told, don't eat that, don't eat that. I've been eating this my whole life. What are you talking about? Just like that guy I saw in Super Size Me who drank 3 times 64, which is what, 192 fluid ounces a day of soda pop until he went blind and had to have gastric bypass surgery. And he had heard warnings before it got to that stage, and he just didn't want to stop. As a young child, I needed somebody to help me because I wasn't capable of making my own decisions. But in many respects, lots of hard working class American people who are, they don't have the ability to make these decisions either, whether because they have suffer from, they don't have the economic means to do it, or they're overworked, or they're undereducated, or what have you. They rely on somebody else to help them. And I think the people for the most part, who are trying to help them are really just taking advantage of them. And as I said, that's my own personal perception. You obviously know where it came from. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's what I perceive. I perceive they're being victimized.
So let me see, taking control of your life. That sounds like a book title. The joke is that.
Hey, John, you bring up,
wait a minute, let me explain myself. That's the title of my first book on how I got over cancer on my own without the help of my doctors. That's the joke. And thank you for quoting my title of my book. But, yeah, it is a very serious topic. And, by the way, the other theme of our books is we provide considerable evidence throughout our books that the problem is addiction, that these foods are chemically addicting and causing this problem in our society. And it's being done intentionally. Some of the foods you put in your food are intentionally addicting to addict you to the foods that they sell, just like drug addicts.
What's MSG? MSG, as I understand it, is a chemical that's put into food that actually has the effect, if I understand correctly, of enlarging or accentuating your taste buds. So when you put MSG on food and you eat the food, it has the effect of making the food seem like, wow, it tastes so amazing, and you have this immediate craving for more. That's part of the process. And you can see how someone who manufactures large amounts of food, if they discovered MSG, they would say, let's put this in here. All we're doing is making the food taste better. But the net effect is a massive increase in profit, in my opinion.
Are you laughing, Simon?
Oh, I have my hand over my...
Because that's another long-running theme in our books. MSG was invented in 1906 by a Japanese chemist, and it was originally made out of a variety of different mushroom combinations. I make it individually. I have an actual recipe I created that makes the real MSG, monosodium glutamate. Now it's a chemical that's cooked up in a lab just about the same way you do crystal meth. So in essence, they are selling a form of crystal meth made in the labs. And by the way, that would also include things made from maltodextrin, high fructose corn syrup. So what happens is, once you start eating this stuff, people become addicted. So when you start eating Snickers, you become addicted to MSG and maltodextrin and the rest of these. And guess what? You get like John, where you can't make it through a radio show without having MSG, because your body literally starts to shake without it. And when you go off MSG, it's like detoxing from heroin. It is just as powerful and as strong as heroin. And that is the problem in our society right now.
Okay, folks, I need to wrap this up. The automated editor is whining in my ear. So let's go once around the table. And I want to thank everyone for taking part. John, you must just be fit to be tied.
Well, actually, I have the tremors, so let me rush through this. a couple things, just for people's self-esteem. Don't try to live up to other people's unattainable standards as far as fitness and whatnot. Everybody's different. And I think, let me comment on this election real quick. I think it is a stark contrast between the ideologies of freedom versus a centralized government. I think the middle class is being eroded. It's going to be further if Obama's reelected. And to me, the goal of any politician in his 4 years, that they should remember the quote of Julius Caesar. I know you'll like this, Manny. He said, "I found Rome a city of bricks. I left it a city of marble." What's going to be this administration's legacy?
Good point, John.
Okay. Mr. Murphy,
I have to tell you, this has been an eye and ear opener for me, because I think Peter did most of the talking. So I was very interested. Peter, you brought some super great points.
Yeah, good job,
Peter. Thank you. John, I also think your point is well made about self-esteem, about young girls, young boys trying to live up to these false idols and that they can't. And, you know, that's a whole nother angle that our society and the big corporations are going after these people, not poisoning us with food and all that stuff, as Peter and Manny were pointing out, but also saying, hey, you got to dress this way even though you can't afford it. You got to wear this type of clothes and this and that. And that's a whole other topic, but it is another squeeze play. I think watch the debates. Manny, I agree with you. Both candidates lie, all four of them. I guess it's going to come down to who lies the least. And it's going to do the, and will that mean, does that mean they're going to do the best? I don't know. But I think it's going to be an interesting debate, and I think it's going to be an election that's going to go down to the wire, up right there with the one from 1960 where Nixon lost to Kennedy in a real squeaker. I think that this election's going to be that way, too, because that's how our country is so... Oh, it's almost put right down the middle, and it's very dangerous at that because both sides seem to want it that way. And Peter, one thing I wanted to say when you were talking about, on one hand the corporation telling us to eat, and on the other hand says, "Oh, you're sick." The same corporation under a different name owns the cure, the alleged cure. As a doctor friend of mine told me, the dope dealers aren't the drug dealers aren't the biggest. Problem in this country is the pharmaceutical companies.
Well, yeah. I mean, to me, what strikes me every day I watch sports on television are the advertisements for the drugs. And I sit there and I shake my head. They advertise the drugs and then they give you this long list of problems that you're going to incur and get, and you're getting them. And it's almost comical. If people 50 years ago could watch these drug advertisements, they would say, oh, my gosh, what kind of world is that? Just in general, I really love, and I'm sorry if I did speak too much today, but I love listening to everybody's points of view. You know, it seems to me in our day and age, we like to say, oh, he's right, she's wrong, or vice versa. But for me personally, I believe that different perspectives just offer different points of view, and the truth is really an attempt to try to harmonize and put together as many of these points of view as possible. You know, one of my favorite movies was My Cousin Vinny, and he holds up a playing card, and he says, if you look at it this way, it looks like a rectangle, and if you look at it this way, it looks like a line. And both points of view are accurate, and what I try to do in my own feeble mind is bring them all together, and sometimes it leaves me torn because I don't know what to do, but I do appreciate all the different points of view, and I think there's truth in all of them.
I didn't mean to insult you. I was very happy to hear you speak up. And
No, you weren't insulting me. I just always feel bad that when I talk too much. I feel like I should tell myself to shut up.
Okay, no, and Simon, thank you, as always.
Peter, you certainly didn't talk too much. I had to reach out to get you to shout out.
What? I enjoy listening.
And Manny, you must have some pearls of wisdom.
Well, not really. I think I've said pretty much what I want. But the bigger issue to me is basically we have to protect ourselves from everything, large corporations, other people who don't have our interests at all. At heart, we have to accept that big business is our enemy because we're their source of income, and they'll do anything they possibly can to take advantage of us because we're nothing more than a line item on their profit list. If you watch the evening news, which is one of my biggest, use the word bugaboos, it is all completely, the entire show consists of drug ads. So we have drug companies that are killing people every day in this country with poor drugs, overdoses of drugs, and a wide variety of other things. But do we see criticism of them? No. Why? Because they are sponsoring the very show that should be criticizing them. And therein lies one of the biggest problems. You want to solve our problems in this country? Get rid of Citizens United. Stop the power of the various corporations. It will stop what John complains about, which is, you know, bad government and government that is a bureaucracy. It isn't a bureaucracy. It's a government tainted by corruption of major corporations. We need to return the government to citizens who want to be there, not people who are working for corporations for money. We need to return the vote to citizens. We need to return our Congress to Americans who are there because they want to help our country, not get permanent benefits the rest of their life for spending one term in Congress. And the only way to do that is to control political contributions, which I know John's against, because that's the only way to stop the illegal conduct that goes on with corporations or funding all these various attacks on us. If you just want to be another mark in the marketing program of America, just support our dear friend Mr. Romney, because that's all he cares about. In the end, you have to make these decisions for yourself as well as about what you eat. But I'm going to end it with this quick story. A friend of ours came back from a long trip to Europe, had lunch with her, and the first thing she said is, "I can't believe how thin all the children are in Europe. Why are they so thin compared to here?" And I just chuckled, because we all know why they're so thin. They don't eat the food sold by American corporations, because that food is banned in Europe. So their children can eat all this rich food we have, what's called the French conundrum. They don't get heavy. They don't have health problems. But Americans do. Gee whiz, John, I wonder why. Could it be that the problem is that Americans are eating this junk food for the benefit of the corporations? Yes, it's the only reason. Thanks, everyone, for listening to us. We'll talk to you next week.
John, I'm going to give you 10 seconds.
All right, Simon. I would just remind Manny, if that's the case, the kids in Africa are thin, too. Maybe it's because American corporations aren't over there.
Oh, yes, they are, John. That's not true. They're trying to poison them with genetically modified foods, and worse than that,
American corporations,
Bill Gates supporting it. What are you talking about?
Need more there to help the people. Their government won't.
Okay, folks, we do need to wrap this up. It's been interesting, as usual. We managed to get off topic, but we managed to get off topic onto a very important topic. I want to thank the entire panel. We'll be back next week, and who knows what we'll be talking about. Till then, it's goodbye, and we'll be back. Bye.